listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show, Outsmart Emotional Eating. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I am a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders, and I know firsthand what it's like to struggle. But guess what? I found the cure to binge eating, and now I help people all over the world find food freedom. And on this show, I am here for you, too. Imagine waking up and thinking about your day, not your diet. How about that? That is the goal. So today, we are going to talk about the 10 myths about binge eating disorder, and I'm going to give you some facts so you can start your healing journey. But first, I just want to follow up on last week's show when we talked about emotional detox, how to cleanse your mind of negative thoughts. And we talked about recognizing what these thoughts are, where these come from, how you learn to relate to yourself in this way. And I promised that I would just mention today, because I didn't get to it last week, about, well, what do you do then? How do you create change? And a huge part of it, of course, is cultivating self-compassion. And that means recognizing your needs, making them important, giving yourself the right to have rights, doing things that are fun for you. Because guess what? If you don't do enough things that are fun for you, food becomes fun. And it also means paying attention to all the different parts of yourself. I remember this one person telling me, she said, well, I'm the queen of self-care. Why do I feel so bad? Why am I still binge eating? And I asked her why, you know, why was she the queen of self-care, like royalty? And she told me how she got, you know, she got blowouts every week. She got her nails done. She got mani-pedi. She got massages. She got facials. She got all of these things. And she said, I'm the queen of self-care. And I said, no, you, that is not self-care, really. That is grooming. And she said, well, what other self is there? Well, we have different parts of ourselves. We have creative parts, intellectual, relational, for some people, spiritual, not just physical. And you really, really have to pay attention to all those parts of yourself. Treat yourself as you would treat a friend, a loved one, someone you care about. If you wouldn't say it to a child or someone you love, do not say it to yourself. Be compassionate, be understanding, be caring, and also develop what's called a growth mindset. That helps you develop a different perspective. So a growth mindset is really just the ability, the sense that you can grow, that you can learn, that you can develop, that you're not stuck. You may feel stuck, but that you're in the process of learning and being and evolving. And embracing a growth mindset allows you to view challenges and setbacks, because boy, do those happen, whether it's with food or anything else, as opportunities for growth rather than indications of failure. Often when we fail, we say, well, I'm a failure. I failed. I'm a failure. But reframing that, that is really a very negative way to see it. And it also personalizes it. So not, you didn't just fail. Now you yourself are a failure, which makes you feel terrible about yourself. And when you feel terrible, you can't accuse yourself of being a failure and make yourself feel good at the same time. Doesn't work that way. Well, often turning to food is a way of coping. So that's why it's important. Let's reframe this way of thinking. So by looking at negative experiences like failing as learning opportunities, you can approach them with curiosity and with a willingness to learn, which leads to possibility and growth. And I think Michael Jordan's famous quote is a really good example of that. I love this quote. He said, I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I've lost almost 300 games. 26 times I've been trusted to take the game-winning shot and missed. I have failed over and over and over again in my life, said Michael Jordan, and that is why I succeed. That is a really important mindset shift. So I just wanted to follow up on that. If you are on LA Talk Radio and you'd like to call in the show, if you have any questions, the number is 323-203-0815. If you are on the Instagram live stream and you have a question or a comment, please feel free to leave it anytime. Okay, so 10 myths about binge eating disorder. Oh, there are so many. Let's get the facts. So if you're currently struggling with binge eating disorder, it can feel like you're all alone, like no one understands what you are going through. It can feel like you have no control over your cravings or your obsessive thoughts, because it's not just about eating, right? It's about thinking about food all the time. But don't give up hope. Binge eating may seem impossible to manage, but it's not. There is help and there is hope. So by debunking some of the most common misconceptions about binge eating disorder, we can remove the stigma. We can create a path towards healing. So let's look at some of these myths. The first one, binge eating disorder is just about a lack of control. And in fact, many people who struggle with binge eating believe that. They think they lack control or willpower. They think they're food addicts, that they're addicted to sugar or whatever. So binge eating is far, far more complicated than that. And the first step to understanding it is to toss aside the notion that it is about control or even that it is about food. But we're sticking with the notion of control right now. So what is binge eating? I just want to touch on that, because while it may seem obvious, people use that word in a different way. Some people say, I totally binged, I ate 4 cookies. Other people will say, I totally binged, I ate 40 cookies. Well, 40 cookies is more like a binge. 4 cookies, while it may be normal eating for some, it may, depending on the size of the cookie, it may be slightly overeating. It in itself is not a binge. So binge eating disorder involves recurring episodes of eating large quantities of food to the point of often of discomfort. You're in pain, and it's accompanied by feelings of shame and guilt and remorse. And here are some key points that differentiate binge eating from overeating. One is frequency. So if you occasionally overdo it a little bit, like, you know, Thanksgiving or the holidays or just going out to special dinner, you might overdo it. That is overeating, which is not the same as binge eating. Binge eating involves at least binging 3 times a week over a 3-month period. In terms of emotions, when people overeat, it's generally not mood, or it might be just a little bit mood, but people who struggle with binge eating are using food as a way of self-soothing, of coping, of distracting, of numbing. It's about using food to cope with difficult emotions. That's why I call it a frenemy. Binge eating is a frenemy. It is a friend. Yes, it is. And an enemy. It is a friend in that it helps you in some way. But of course, it also hurts you. It helps you because it distracts you, numbs you, comforts you, self-soothes you, whatever it is. It's doing something for you, often distraction. But of course, it hurts your self-esteem. It hurts your body. It hurts your sense of self. Also, binging disorder is a lack of control. It's not about control, but it involves a lack of control. And you feel like you're unable to stop even when you want to. So recognizing that binge eating goes well beyond just overeating and it's not about willpower is really important. It's not a choice. It is a serious disorder. It is a coping strategy that is quite serious, and it deserves understanding and compassion. And if you are struggling with it, that means you need to give yourself that understanding and compassion. And remember, you are not to blame. You want to be curious, not critical. Instead of blaming yourself or all the things that we say when we are struggling with food that are not helpful, we want to be more curious. Remember, there are 2 reasons two main reasons behind binge eating. One has to do with having the clinically diagnosable and treatable condition of binge eating disorder. And the other is about dieting and deprivation. And often it's both. So again, binge eating is a way of coping with emotional distress. You may be turning to food for comfort, to escape from difficult emotions, or to displace them. Like maybe you're mad at somebody, but you don't want to be mad at that person. It's too scary to be mad at that person. You're not allowed to be mad at that person. So instead you get mad at yourself for what you're eating or what you weigh. And this is often, by the way, why binging at night is such an issue. During the day, we are busy. We're doing things. We're working. We're taking care of kids. We're working and taking care of kids. We're just, you know, our minds are occupied. But at night, we're not so busy. And we may start thinking about things we don't want to think about. We might start feeling things we don't want to feel. And binging temporarily provides relief or distraction from those uncomfortable thoughts and feelings. It's an attempt to help ourselves that ends up backfiring. And that's why it's a frenemy. But look, when we find new ways of coping, everything changes for good. So the key to learning how to stop eating at night or eating when bored or binging at any time is to first identify and then process those underlying thoughts and emotions that are the roots to the behavior, and then finding new ways of responding to yourself. And so to manage your food cravings, whether it's at night or any other time, get curious about what's happening inside. Instead of focusing on what you are eating, think about what would be on your mind if you were not eating, if you were not preoccupied with food. Binge eating is also not only due to some emotional distress or conflict, it also is the result of diet mentality and the black and white thinking that goes along with diet mentality. Those food rules, those horrible food rules that make us feel constrained and deprived. By the way, I only have one food rule. This is my rule. It has to be yummy. That's it. It has to be yummy. If it's not yummy, I'm not going to have it. That is my only food rule. It's not, I can't have sugar. I can't have this. I can't have anything in a wrapper. No, it just has to be yummy. All right. So what is this so-called diet mentality? It's a mindset that categorizes food as either good or bad, attaching moral value to our eating habits and causing guilt and shame around food. So dieting involves deprivation, right? There's always something that you can't have when you're on a diet, whether we're calling it a diet or a meal plan or whatever name you're going to give to it. There's always something you can't have, which only makes you want that more. And then when we have the black and white thinking, we think if we eat something on that list of I'm not allowed to have that, then you think, well, I've already blown it. The day is ruined. I've ruined the day. I might as well start over tomorrow. And in the meantime, I might as well have the rest of the cake or the cookies or the ice cream or the chips or the pizza or the whatever. And then we end up binging on all our forbidden foods. And following that, we say, oh, I'm starting over. We start a new diet. And of course, eventually that leads to binge eating relapse. Or that ends to binge eating and relapse. So, you know, there's a reason that the diet binge cycle keeps perpetuating itself, because when we go on a diet, it leads to a binge. When we binge, it leads to dieting. And this creates this diet binge cycle that keeps us locked in a never-ending pattern of dieting, binge eating, and really diminished self-esteem, which is the worst part of all. So again, it is a widespread belief that binge eating disorder is merely a lack of self-control over food. In my Facebook group, the Food for Thought community, by the way, if you're not a member, please reach out. We now have about 1,300 members all over the world, and it's a great community. Just look up Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community on Facebook. But I once said, well, what are the stupidest things that people have told you about binge eating? And a lot of people said that people told them, well, just stop. Just don't eat. Just stop. That's like saying to someone who's anorexic, well, just eat. Oh, okay. I'll just stop then. Yeah, it's that easy. No, it is not. It is a health condition. It is a coping mechanism. It is a strategy that is treatable, but it has nothing to do with just needing more control. All right, another myth, that binge eating disorder only affects women. Yeah, guess what? Men suffer too. As the saying goes, it's just as hard to be Ken as it is to be Barbie. So despite these social stereotypes, binge eating disorder does not discriminate by gender or age. And men often struggle silently due to the stigma attached, which makes them less likely to seek help. So it's a very prevalent myth. It is an incorrect one that eating disorders, especially binge eating disorder, are problems only women face. Gender stereotypes often kind of color our perceptions, but binge eating disorder and binge eating affects both men and women. In fact, it's thought that men make up about 40% of people who struggle. I think actually that number is higher. It's just that guys don't go in for treatment. And often they don't know they have a binge eating disorder. They think they have no willpower. And also because there's something of a stigma, guys are much less likely to open up, admit they're struggling, and seek help. And so it's really important to challenge those stereotypes and create an environment where everyone feels safe to get help, no matter what your gender, male, female, non-binary, whatever, any age. Also, guys may struggle with body image issues and trouble dealing with emotions. They feel embarrassed. They feel ashamed about their eating disorder. It leads to secrecy. It leads to shame. It leads to isolation. And they experience the same physical and psychological consequences of binge eating disorder, like sometimes weight gain. Although, by the way, that's another myth that all people who struggle with binge eating disorder are overweight. I will get to that later. But they also have, you know, low self-esteem, depression, anxiety. But men are taught and socialized, oop, don't have those feelings. So not only do they have those feelings, they don't have a way of coping with them, and they don't have a way of talking about what they're going through. One important thing to know with guys is that it can manifest differently. Binge eating can, okay, there's that national test. Hopefully it will stop soon. Has it stopped? Is it over? Okay, we were just interrupted by the national emergency test. It is just a test, so good news on that score. And we're back. All right. I'm talking about how binge eating disorder can manifest differently in guys. So men are more likely to binge on foods that are considered more socially acceptable or masculine, such as burgers, pizza, that kind of thing. And another misconception is that men, or really anyone, but men are primarily overweight or obese. Weight gain is a possible consequence of binge eating, but it is not a defining characteristic. In the clinical requirements for binge eating disorder, they do not talk about weight. They talk about behavior. So binging goes beyond the physical. And seeking help for guys, it's hard. Again, there are so many stereotypes around masculinity that can make it very challenging for men to acknowledge and address their eating issues. I just talked about this in a with Marcus Kane, or talked about it on his show and here many times. And Marcus Kane, nutrition coach, who really can helps a lot of guys with this issue. So it would be good to check out his podcast, Strong Not Starving. If you're listening to this, you're a guy or you know a guy who is struggling, check out the Strong Not Starving podcast. It's really, really helpful for men and for all humans. All right. Myth number three, binge eating disorder is not a real condition. It is not a real medical condition. Despite the pervasiveness of binge eating disorder, by the way, it is the most common, the most prevalent eating disorder in the United States and, well, anywhere. It is still so shrouded in stigma and misunderstanding. And one of these is that it's not a real condition. It's just an excuse. It's just an excuse for overeating, say some people incorrectly. Binge eating is not about overindulgence. It is a negative coping strategy that is misunderstood and stigmatized. The misconception is that it's just about being greedy or lacking self-control. This is so harmful and untrue. It drives me crazy. It really upsets me. It's so, so wrong. Binge eating disorder is complicated. It's complex. And it has such severe emotional effects, as well as physiological. We need to change the narrative of blame and shame and recognize that binge eating disorder is a valid mental health issue that can be treated. So important. It can be treated. So by dispelling these myths, we can encourage more people to seek help and create a more compassionate society. How about that? That supports healing and recovery for people who are affected by binge eating disorder and any mental health condition, any emotional health condition. So, by the way, as far as whether it is a real medical condition, for years, binge eating disorder was misunderstood and wasn't in the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, used by all therapists, psychologists, and psychiatrists. But in 2013, it was included in its own category. And this was a decision that was based on, you know, years of research and clinical evidence, and it acknowledged binge eating disorder as a serious mental health condition characterized by uncontrollable episodes of binge eating. And so, you know, this is a formal recognition that I hope will give hope and give access to support to more people battling this condition. Remember, more people struggle with binge eating disorder than struggle with anorexia and bulimia combined. Way, way, way more. It is very, very serious. It is very, very common. And it's the most common eating disorder that many people don't realize they have. All right. Here's another myth that also is so prevalent. Binge eating disorder can be overcome by, wait for it, dieting. So people often see binge eating as a simple issue of food intake. They overlook the emotional and psychological struggles that lie underneath. And they think, well, dieting will help me eat less. If I diet, I won't binge. I'll just stick to a meal plan and that'll keep me from binge eating. The opposite is true. Dieting can cause binging. Yes, dieting causes binging. I already talked about the diet binge cycle just a moment ago. Dieting leads to binge eating due to the restrictive nature of many diets, most diets. When we restrict our food intake and follow strict rules, it creates a sense of deprivation. Or even if we don't have, you know, even if we're not restricting food intake overall, but we're restricting a certain category of food, it creates deprivation. And that deprivation, in turn, creates a preoccupation with food it creates a wish to have what we aren't allowing ourselves to have, right? When you say, well, you can't have this, you always want this. You say, well, you can't have it. What do you just say? Oh, I don't want it anymore. No, you want it more. You want it more. So then when you finally have it, because your willpower can only last so long, then that leads to binging. So that's why dieting, it's a cycle of deprivation and then binging. Also, being super hungry, if you're on a diet that makes you feel hungry, leads to intense hunger and cravings. And then you lose control over food once you start eating, which can also result in binge eating, which is not the same as binge eating disorder, but it is binging. And then that triggers guilt, it triggers shame, and then you may binge just to deal with your feelings of guilt and shame because you don't have another way of responding to yourself. So that's why so much of the work to heal from binge eating disorder is to create a new way of responding to ourselves, identifying what's really going on, because we can turn to food so fast, so fast, we don't even realize we're being triggered by some emotion or situation. We think we're being triggered by food. That's why it's very important to realize, well, what is the true trigger, which may be hidden from you? And then express it, express what you're feeling, express what you need, express what's going on, and then validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. Then comfort yourself with words by acknowledging and validating the truth of your experience. So often we identify our feelings, oh, I'm mad. And then we go right to dismissing them. Oh, but I shouldn't be mad. You know, I'm sad. Oh, but I have no right to be sad. Other people have it worse. Why am I sad about this? So we identify it. We don't feel it. And then we try to talk ourselves out of it by dismissing it, positive thinking it away, and all of that. That doesn't help. We need to identify it, express it, and then respond to ourselves. Also, dieting involves labeling certain foods good or bad, which creates a negative relationship with food. And this leads to guilt and shame. When we eat something we've labeled bad, we feel bad about ourselves. So then we eat these foods, they make us feel bad about ourselves, leads to anguish, leads to negative self-talk. How could you have eaten that? Oh my God. And then we may binge just to silence our inner critic. It is a terrible cycle. Now remember, not everyone who diets will develop binge eating disorder, of course, but there is a strong association between dieting and the development of disordered eating behaviors, whether it's binge eating disorder or something else. So it's really important to approach your health goals in a balanced and sustainable way, to encourage yourself and focus on, you know, nurturing and nourishing yourself, your emotions and your body, rather than by restricting. Also, diets focus on only what we're eating and not why. Dieting keeps us from understanding ourselves. It keeps us from recognizing the underlying conflicts and emotions that lead to binge eating. And it keeps us focused on what we are eating instead of on what's eating at us. And, you know, something to keep in mind here is, by the way, the role of therapy, because many people think, I can handle this on my own. I can do this on my own, right? I can do it. Well, wrong. Binge eating disorder is not just about food. It's a coping. It's about, you know, coping. It's a coping strategy. It's a way of giving yourself emotional regulation and more. So professional help is really required for lasting change. And it's often a coping mechanism for dealing with stress, with trauma, with negative emotions. So psychotherapy helps us identify and understand those triggers. It helps us develop coping strategies and work through any unresolved issues behind binge eating disorders. Without therapy, most people stay locked in that diet binge cycle because you cannot have an objective view of your subjective situation. Therapy provides tools and support to address the underlying psychological and emotional factors that contribute to this disordered relationship with food. And in particular, depth psychology, which also is known as psychoanalysis, which is my modality, it helps you identify the hidden emotions and conflicts that impact your relationship with yourself and therefore with food, and then helps you identify new ways of responding to yourself. And that is what creates lasting change. For an example, someone recently said to me, all I'm thinking about is going to the store and buying, you know, food and just like, I'm planning my binge. Talk me off the ledge. Like, what can I do to stop thinking about going to the store and buying cookies? And I said, well, if you weren't thinking about going to the store and buying cookies, you know, what would be on your mind? What is this going to resolve? What is this going to distract you from? Well, it was, I'm actually really annoyed with my wife, but I she's such a good person. I don't feel like I can be annoyed with her. So what was this person doing? They were going to go binge, and then they were going to be annoyed and mad at themselves rather than be annoyed with their wife, who was annoying for a particular, I'm trying to be vague, for particular reasons. And by the way, this wife was kind of judgy, kind of critical. This person, their mother was also kind of judgy and critical. So what do you know? They unconsciously repeated their dynamic with their mother and married a person just like their mother. So now not only are they annoyed with their wife and don't want to be, so they're going to eat cookies and displace onto themselves the annoyance they really feel for their wife, but the relationship with the wife really also has to do with unresolved relationship with her mother. So it just goes to these different layers. Why is that important to know? Because by healing the original relationship and finding new ways of handling the relationship with the wife in the present, this person is no longer going to distract themselves by thinking about cookies. Hopefully that makes sense. All right, myth number 5. Binge eating disorder only affects overweight people. Oh, so not true. While it is true that some people struggling with binge eating disorder are overweight, yes, that is true, binge eating affects people of all body shapes and sizes. It also affects people of average weight and even some who are underweight. So you absolutely cannot diagnose this disorder simply from someone's appearance. Very important. And this misconception that only overweight people experience binge eating can be harmful because it prevents people who don't fit the stereotype from seeking help or getting a proper diagnosis. So it's really important. If you are whatever weight you are, if you have an unhealthy, unhappy relationship with food, it needs your attention. Period. So another reason why the myth that binge eating only affects overweight people is misleading and unhelpful is that it fails to acknowledge the emotional and psychological factors that contribute to the development of binge eating in the first place. It is a coping mechanism. Again, I stress it is a coping mechanism. It's a way of dealing with stress, anxiety, depression, any kind of emotional challenge that you're experiencing, or a way of rewarding yourself too. Sometimes if it's the only way to reward yourself, how can you give it up? And these are underlying factors. This is about being human, right? It's about being a person in this world and experiencing stuff, having feelings and thoughts about life. And so if you only focus on weight, you forget that you're dealing with a person. And if you're a person who's only focusing on your weight, you're forgetting that you have a whole range of things going on in your mind, in your head, in your heart that needs your attention. Also, assuming that overweight people have binge eating disorder just creates more stigma and shame. Again, it impacts people of any size. And by recognizing that it is not solely determined by weight and addressing those underlying emotional factors, we can stop the shame, slay the shame, and create more healing. And it is possible to heal. Okay, myth number 6. Binge eating disorder does not coexist with other disorders. It is a common idea that it's like this standalone condition. It's so not true. It's interwoven with everything else. Many people who struggle with food also struggle with depression, anxiety, other mood disorders. Binge eating disorder has been associated with higher rates of anxiety, including, you know, generalized anxiety disorder, social anxiety disorder. And this is not surprising because it's a way of managing painful and difficult emotions, including anxiety. Anxiety is really hard to manage. One way that we can deal with anxiety is to use food to sedate our bodies too. If you're super anxious and you know that feeling, that shaky, anxious, awful feeling, and you have a bunch of carbs, what's going to happen? Your body is going to just relax and be more sedated. I can't think of a better word. So it helps you relax. Of course, you know, it is not a good way to relax, but it works, which is why you keep doing it. So that's why it's so important to recognize that whatever's going on with binging has to do with whatever is going on within you. The behavior comes from somewhere. And people say to me often, oh, but Dr. Nina, I think it's just a habit. Okay, it's a habit. But a habit? A habitual response to what? Right? You don't just come home and eat the kitchen. No, it's a habit because you come home, you feel something, you don't like being alone, you get in touch with loneliness, you get in touch with anger, you get in touch with yearning of some kind, you feel overwhelmed, you're feeling something, or you don't allow yourself to feel it because you go right to food. So yes, it is a habitual response, a habitual way of coping with something. But by resolving the underlying depression, anxiety, whatever's going on with you, binge eating also resolves. Yes. And it is not something that you have to deal with forever. That is a common misconception. I don't think it's one of my 10, is it? Which is that you have to be in recovery forever. You have to be in recovery forever. You're going to have to deal with it for the rest of your life. No, this is not the case. That is why I created the binge cure method, the binge cure method. And that's why I don't talk about being in recovery. I talk about liberation. Being in recovery means you are every day waking up and telling yourself you're going to be good. You're going to stick to your meal plan. You're going to think about this and be mindful and make sure you don't binge and you're not going to have certain things in the house and all the things. And in recovery means you're in it. It's never ending. You have to think about it all the time. Well, that sounds terrible to me. I don't like the idea of that. So, it's untrue, even more to the point. It is untrue. You can be liberated from binge eating. Liberation means you fought the internal battle, you won the war, and now you're free. Liberation is true food freedom and freedom to be your best, happiest self. I love the analogy of a story I use about Michelangelo, the artist Michelangelo. And apparently he was asked at some point, Michelangelo, how do you take these great blocks of stone and turn them into statues? And Michelangelo said, and I paraphrase, I don't turn the stone into statues. I free the statues from the stone. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that a great way to look at it? That's how I look at this work, at therapy, at psychoanalytic coaching, which is what I do, and psychoanalysis. That I'm not here to turn someone from one thing into another. We're together going to chip away at what keeps you stuck so that you can be your most authentic, best self. So it's not about you changing. It's about you becoming who you always been and to feel good within yourself and authentic and happy. And so that is the goal of liberation, that you can really liberate yourself from emotional eating. You can take control of your life and you can feel good in your body. These things are possible because when you look at the why you're turning to food, why are you binge eating instead of focusing on what you are eating, and you resolve that, which is hard to do. It's easier to focus on dieting, I'll tell you that. But if you focus on dieting, you'll be doing it forever. If you do the work, if you have the courage to do the work of uncovering and chipping away at what's keeping you stuck, you're free forever. That statue is never going to become a block of stone again. That statue is a statue. And so it can be. So that's why I guess a myth that I think is really important is that you always have to be in recovery. No, liberation is possible. It's something that you can put in your rear view mirror. It's something you could say, yeah, I used to do that, but I don't do it anymore. We don't say, oh, I'm in recovery from, say, depression. I'm in recovery from depression. I'm okay, you know, but I'm in recovery. You'd never say I'm in recovery from depression. You say, yeah, you know what? I used to be depressed. Now I feel great. I used to feel anxious. Now I don't. I feel good. Right? It's in your rearview mirror. It's something that's in the past. I used to binge eat. Now I don't. And it's not something I want to do. So this is possible. Very important. Okay, let me just skip over. Oh, you know what? Here's one. Here's a myth. People with binge eating don't want to get better. You would not believe how prevalent this myth is, actually. Some people think like, oh, you're just complacent. You don't actually want to change. You're just labeling it as a disorder because you just want to keep binging on pizza. This myth is completely, completely false. People with binge eating absolutely want to get better. It is a serious condition. It has significant impact on your sense of self, on your physical and emotional well-being. It is hell to be in it. And of course you desire to feel better and live a healthier life. But again, it's also not linear. With any change, relapse and setbacks are common. That doesn't indicate a lack of desire to get better. That indicates conflict. Part of you wants to change, part of you is afraid to change. And that's just being human. So creating lasting change involves learning new coping strategies, addressing those underlying emotional conflicts, developing a healthier relationship with yourself and therefore with food. And yes, this requires patience, perseverance, and support, but it is possible. And again, you know, I love the term liberation. You don't want to be in recovery. You want to feel liberated. A battle has been fought and won. The war is over. It is possible to stop that battle. Make peace with food by making peace with yourself and feeling good. Binge eating disorder only affects adults. This is another myth. It's believed to only affect adults. It is definitely more commonly diagnosed in adults, but it also affects kids and adolescents. Absolutely. A lot of adolescents, probably every single not every single, but most people who come to me, they say, well, I started eating in secret and binging when I was 7, when I was 9, when I was whatever, right? And again, it can affect people of all ages. And it is not limited to a certain age group. And one thing is, with kids, they may do things like hide food. They may do things like go to their friend's house and eat a bunch of food there. It may not be showing up in their house that their parents can see. But it's important to look out for. And so that if your kids or you know someone whose kids are struggling, to intervene and to get them help earlier rather than later is really important. Often kids are just told stop eating, or parents hide food or shame them or say things like, do you really need that? Or you don't really need a second helping, or, you know, things like that, that just create shame and make things worse. So yes, it can happen to anyone at any age of any gender. The last myth, myth number 10, is it is a choice. This is a huge misconception that it is a choice. No, it is not a choice. People with binge eating disorder do not choose their situation. Nobody chooses to eat until they feel sick and then feel disgusted by themselves and filled with self-hatred. No one wakes up and says, what can I do today to feel gross? What can I do today to feel gross and shameful and awful? Says no one ever. That is not how it goes. No one chooses it. It's a condition driven by a combination of psychological, emotional, even biological factors that can make it extremely challenging to heal from. But it is not a choice. It is a complex, complicated condition. And remember, people with binge eating, they have stress. They have things going on. They get anxious, depressed, lonely. They're using food to cope. So it's a way of dealing with emotional pain. It's a way of numbing. It's a way of distracting. It's a way of displacing all of these things. It's a way to escape or find comfort, even though, of course, it leads to guilt and shame, which leads to binging, terrible cycle. So recognize that it is a coping strategy that is just a negative coping strategy and hurts us more than it helps us. And that's why it's really important to challenge these myths, whether it's someone you know who's struggling with food or whether you yourself are struggling with food, to recognize these as myths and really start on a journey of healing. So getting informed and then seeking help. That is the way that you can create change. Liberation is not just possible. The binge cure is not just possible with the right guidance. It is probable. And all you have to do is reach out. And by the way, I would like to say, just have a couple minutes left, that finding someone who specializes in binge eating disorder is very crucial. People who specialize have the knowledge and expertise to provide you with the most effective treatment options. They understand the complexities of binge eating disorder. They can create a treatment plan specifically for you. So it's really important to find the right person to help you. Whoever that person is, make sure they have the knowledge and the credentials to guide you towards healing. And also, having professional support gives you a support system, right? Even if it's just one person, it's very isolating and overwhelming and shaming to struggle with food. But when you have someone who's there with you and for you and guiding you, you are not going to face it alone. And you can get support and knowledge and guidance, and you'll have a safe space to express your thoughts and feelings and work through it and create a new way of relating to yourself. And that is so, so, so very important. If I if I leave you with anything today, I really want to say this, that there is hope. No matter how long you've struggled, how bad it is, how many decades, what you've tried, there is hope. You really can liberate yourself from emotional eating and feel good in your body and your life. And that is our show for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, psychoanalyst, here to help you create a binge-free, happy life. I am live on LA Talk Radio every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, or you can listen later wherever you get podcasts. And for a deeper dive into the binge cure, please check out my book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating, available on Amazon, and the new companion workbook, The Binge Cure Journal, which is a guided journal to help you every step of the way liberate yourself from emotional eating by doing exactly what I talked about today. So stay curious, not critical, and I will see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.